really, really good day, good week. Who knows what's going to happen, but I guarantee something is going to happen.
Say What? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda, it's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
And welcome to the Say What Radio Show, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio. This is September 8th, 2018. Wait a minute, something's happening here. What the heck? Oh, okay. Somehow or another, I hit the player. My name's Nancy Hopkins. With me is Dolly Howard, and we're going to just have a fun time today because we actually did a little research on a couple of things. Dolly, you there?
Yep. And it wasn't me who did the music.
No, it was me. So, how are you doing today?
Okay, I even actually cooked in the kitchen for a while.
You cooked in the kitchen for a while. Okay, what'd you make? Something neat?
Yeah, I made deviled eggs again because I make those and they go really fast, like usually the same day. And I decided I hadn't had sauerkraut and mashed potatoes in a long time. So I made those for myself because Annette doesn't like them. I threw the house open and turned the fan on to try to get the smell out for her, but it was good.
So you just have the sauerkraut and the mashed potatoes? No, no, nothing else?
Deviled eggs.
Oh.
Yeah, that was it. That's my kind of diet.
Interesting.
Really crappy.
Well, it's what's your nationality? Why would you come up with that kind of concoction?
Because that's what I was hungry for.
But did your mom, because I know a lot of people don't even ever had sauerkraut.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, we came from a German fam. I mean, German-Irish type of thing. So sauerkraut, we didn't see it that often, but we were certainly aware of it. Only with pork. We would only have it with pork.
Oh, I've had it with pork, too. Yeah, cooked in it and everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You throw a pork loin and sauerkraut in a crock pot?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's good, isn't it?
It's very, very good. I haven't had it in a long time because, of course, then people got, I ain't going to eat pork. I'm like, oh, for crying out loud, And I don't want to eat a whole pork loin by myself or whatever, so anyway.
Well, just ask the butcher to cut it up.
Not too much to do. My attitude about food is, well, I gotta do it. I have, except for chocolate ice cream. I don't have any kind, it doesn't intrigue me, it's not something that I look forward to, that I spend a lot of time thinking about. To me, it's a chore. Oh, I gotta feed myself again.
Yeah, well, that's when I finally decide, all right, I have to do this, because my body is getting weaker by the minute, because I can go several days without eating. And so then I tell myself, you gotta do it, so what are you gonna do? And that's when I decide to go on a marathon of cooking potato salad and deviled eggs and make a ham. And but when I'm just kind of sort of hungry, I do like today deviled eggs and mashed potatoes and sauerkraut.
Well, I went out and got under the persuasion of my friend Cindy, this vegetable powder at Sprouts, And because I'll forget to eat. And then you feel so crappy that you're going like, oh God, I don't feel like making anything, you know?
Yeah.
And, but when I take that drink, like I just had one right now. No, I did make up some food, but I didn't feel like eating it. And I didn't want to get bogged down and want to sleep, because I do that too. Oh, I eat. Oh, I got to sleep.
Yeah. See, well, that comes natural after eating, yes.
Well, that's you know. So, but you drink that powdered up vegetable thing, and it's a real, it'll get me back to a point where I'm hungry and can do something about it. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So, she probably saved me because I was losing a lot of weight because I kept forgetting to eat.
I forget, and sometimes I just am too lazy to fix it. I don't want to make all that stuff.
I've tried to convince the dog, but he has nothing. He's no. He's not going to have nothing. And what about that the present I got?
What present?
The one I sent you the photo, the video of.
Oh, my gosh. So your reputation is going around the animal world that you're going to take in any little kittens they bring to you.
No, what happened was that Cali cat stray, she comes in, I see her. I saw the little boy, the brother. I'd seen him, but all of a sudden she's there, and she's acting very domesticated in that she doesn't seem too spooked by me, and I suspect now that she had been watching me for a while. So she comes in, and I'm like, is this cat going to be pregnant or pregnant? Because she was very young when she got there. But I just had this, oh, no, baby, kind of, you know, feeling about it. So I was able to actually catch her. And I brought her in the house because she was so domesticated that it was real easy. I just kept putting the food in a carrier. And when she went in one day, I just shut it. With the intent of taking her to the vet, but I was concerned that she was going to go into heat, not that she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got her in the house, she just was like really, really freaked out, you know? And so I kept her in there for 2 days, and plus the brother was going nuts in the yard. He was like, what are you, oh, you taking? Oh my God. I didn't talk to Gene about it, but Derek can connect with, animals, and he said that he thinks you've done something with her, and he's all upset. So it was just, now she's hidden in the house and I can't even get to her and she won't come out, you know? So I said, this is not working. I opened up the back door and out she goes. Well, everything was fine. She's not looking like she's pregnant. And as a matter of fact, I was concerned because she's eating a lot, but she's losing weight. Never once thought that she had given birth. Never once. Okay.
But
so I'm out there like 2 days ago and I'm sitting there and I'm trying to get her domesticated. So as I bring the food out, she rubs up against me and I pat her and we do that. And then I put the food down and I'll pat her while she's eating. And I'm, you know, just trying to, you know, win her over. And I'm doing this, and she's eating, and all of a sudden, something catches my eye, and I look up, and here's this little kitten. And I'm going like, I mean, I didn't even know how to react. It was like, oh, my God, I think I'm looking at a kitten. And I mean, a young kitten, you know? And then all of a sudden, boop, there's a second one. And I'm going, and then there's a third one. And then all of a sudden, they see me, and they take off, and there's all this... Because I've got this wildflowers thing, and all the wildflowers are going back and forth, and I'm going like, how many are there? You know? Because it was like, I actually at that time thought there was at least four, maybe five.
Uh-huh.
But it turned out they were just very fast kittens. And there's only three of them. There's three of them. Just as cute as can be. I mean, oh my God, they're just... But now I've got these kittens and I've got this cat that's going to have more babies if I don't get her fixed. And it's
yes,
like,
she is.
Oh my God. How did my life get so complicated? I was happy with one dog, you know? Well, and the part of it is she is such an incredibly good mom. I know that she told it answers a lot of questions because, okay, so I do this with the food and stuff, and she'd walk away after she'd eaten, and she'd be you know, like 4 or 5 feet from me, and she starts meow, meow, like she's yelling at me. Uh-huh. And I'm going like, why is she yelling? Why are you yelling at me? I just fed, why are you? She was telling the kittens to stay hidden. You know, but I didn't get that until I saw her interacting with them. And at one point yesterday, she went meow, and they ran to her.
Oh, wow.
I mean, ran to her. Like, they were, a couple of them were, even had their heads in the food still. Uh-huh. You know, oh, they're so funny. Anyway, so all of a sudden, it's like, Gaia, why are we needing these? Why are we doing this?
The kitties, they are so cute.
Oh, they're just...
What are you going to do with them? Are you going to leave them outside, or are you going to try to bring them in?
Oh, I have to. I can't bring them in. I live in a small house. It's one thing when you've been living in a small house, and you know, but I've got all this electronic equipment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Newbie, God bless him, when he passed, the, you know, I mean, I miss him still, but the fact that I don't have to put barricades around the computer.
Right.
I mean, in the middle of the show one day, I ran in to take go to the bathroom. I come back out. He's sitting on the keyboard. He locked up the entire keyboard, and I couldn't get the keyboard to work.
Oh, no.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, to have three young... Oh, no, 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 no. They're going to have to be outside cats.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I will build them a cat house, or, you know. But you never know. Life just brings you the strangest things.
Oh, and I saw the video, I thought, well, and it was so tiny, my eyes are really acting up, and I couldn't see it. All I saw were there were some kitties running around a mother, but I couldn't see them doing anything funny, because I thought it was one of those funny cat videos.
No, I was just introducing you to my family.
Well, then when you let me know that, I was so impressed, I went back and watched it a few more times.
Well, I'm losing time, you know, because I go out there and, you know, first I've got to deal, you know, love on her and everything, and then I put the food down and she starts eating, and then I have to wait and see their little faces, because when they see her eating, and I do push it away more, I push it out farther away from me, you know. Uh-huh. Than I was, because I know that they're still kind of like leery of me, you know, and I keep getting it closer and closer. But you know, so I wait, and I'll see the grass start to move, you know, and then I'll see and it's always who I call Drew, because I had a orange cat that was named Andrew, and this guy, I'm pretty sure his energy is male, but I think I can see two little balls on him even from a distance, you know. So if I can see that now, he's going to be a real bruiser. But he's the one that comes out and, you know, kind of looks things over. I think the other two might be females. But, and then, you know, the second one, they always come out in the same, you know, it's always Drew. Then this other one that looks so much like her mother, the coloring and everything. And then there's this one that I thought was maybe the runt, but when you see him side by side, she's not the runt. But she's definitely the last one in, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, my yeah. God. And they just are, they're already, I mean, coming very close. I mean, they're going to be easy to work with. They're so young yet. And then the dad, who I think is Callie Cat's brother, he's all of a sudden now starting to get much closer. You know.
Oh.
Yeah. He.
So his leg is healed.
Yes. Yes. He seems fine. He seems fine. And today I didn't think he was out there. I was feeding her and watching to see if the kittens were awake even. And so all of a sudden I see Drew, but as I saw Drew, well, I know this has got to be his father. His father comes up, and he had never come in while I was outside. I mean, he makes sure the door that is double shut, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so he comes up, and now he's close to me, and he's looking at me, and he's got just the slightest cross eyes. You know, just the slightest. So he's just like, He's so cute. He's tuxedo. He's all black. But he went over to the bowls, and they all, even the kittens came up there. He was eating with the kittens. So, you know, you don't have any...
He's hungry. Yeah.
But he's also very caring. I mean, some male cats will, you know, take after the feral cats. You know, it could hurt kittens.
Uh-huh.
But not this guy. He's just one big, loving daddy kind of guy.
Oh. Good. So now you're going to have a family of cats to feed. How long are you going to feed them? Until the next litter comes along?
No, I've got to figure out how to get her. You know, because by the time that the little ones would be to an age that you should fix them, I'm going to be able to handle them. Because they're so young now, I mean, I could scoop them up and run away with them. They can't. They're still pretty little.
Yeah.
Now, today, I actually picked her up and put her on my lap. But she was like, what the hell?
You mean Mama?
Mama. I actually
oh,
was
wow.
able, yeah, I was actually doing that. So I think I'm going to use my secret weapon, catnip.
My girls go nuts with that.
Yeah, I'm going. Well, I should have known because I was over at Sandy's house and she says to me, "Do you want some catnip?" And because she knew I had the two strays, and I said, "Well, if you got some, yeah, I'll take some more." And I didn't even know about the kittens at that point. And she gives me this great big container of catnip. I said, Sandy, I don't need all this catnip. Well, maybe I do. But I will start putting catnip in the carrier so that she gets used to going in the carrier to get the catnip. Uh-huh. And then I will set it up to get her to the vet or whatever and then put the catnip in there and she'll go in and I'll shut the door. That's what I'm intending to do.
Uh-huh. I hope it works out.
Well, me too, because she's going to go nutsola. I mean, I just know that she is such a good mom and so connected to those babies. You know, somebody said to me, well, you're going to give them away? I said, I don't know that I could take her babies away from her.
Yeah.
I don't. You know, I'm going to leave them outside. I'll feed them. I'll give them as much care and attention as I can. But... You know, in 6 months or a year, I'm going to say, those cats, they're on the computer. Damn cat.
I know. But I wasn't going to say it.
Hey, I have no illusion of who runs my life.
Really? It's like me getting mad at Amber all the time. I yell at her, I'm getting rid of you. I've had it this time. I mean it. Doggone, I'm so pissed at you. I can't stand another minute of it. I well, still have her. She's still running my life.
Well, Shiloh, you know, I mean, it's like, Newbie would jump up. I'm into a show. I'm talking, and all of a sudden, a cat flies out from God only knows where, scares the crap out of me, and I start screaming at the cat. Luckily, most of the time, I got the mute off before I did. But now the dog is upset because I'm upset, and so I mean, we didn't lose a lot of sleep over losing Newbie. It was like, oh God, he's gone. Yeah, I know. Wow. Oh. Kidding, Newbie. I'm kidding. We miss him terribly. But who knows? Maybe this Drew is Newbie come back for all I know. Because I have seen him reincarnate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. You just got to go with the flow, you know? I mean, what am I going to do? I always said when I moved into this property, I said, I will not take an animal from the outside in, but if they come in the yard and they ask for help, I will help them. I never knew they'd be lined up at the street. I mean, who imagined that? And one time I had 11 cats.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, two cats next door had kittens, right?
Now you sound like Colleen.
Oh, well, okay, so these people next door, I don't even know them, and they have this a mother cat and then a baby of hers had kittens at the same time. And I don't know any of this, except that also one day I walk into my bedroom and sitting on my bed is a kitten. I've never seen him before. Now, my cats would come in a window. You know, they had they could come in and out the cat door window. And he's sitting on my bed, and he's pure orange. He ended up being Andrew. He was mystical. This cat was mystical. But he's a kitten. And I don't know what he was doing, because he just sitting there looking at me. And he never left the room. I mean, I started to feed him, because after hours, he still hadn't left. I didn't know where he had come from. And so I started feeding him, but he didn't leave the place for 3 days. Then I find out about that he's probably a kitten from these guys next door, right? So I decided that I was going to extend the electric fence, because I had electric fence up for the dogs. I had German Shepherds. And so I said, I'll just put the electric fence there, and they won't come through that electric fence. And for the first time, I'm out there working, getting the, you know, just putting another strand in it. I'd been using this fence for years. It's, you know, never hurt anybody. I wasn't concerned about any of that. I just didn't want any more kittens. By that time, I mean, I had a whole bunch of my own. And this cat, this orange cat, Andrew, comes out for the first time in 3 days, sees me doing this thing, walked up to that wire after I turned it on, and got hit. And jumped, you know, got thrown back. He's just a little guy. And I look at him, and I go, oh, dude, man, that was, wow. I didn't expect it would affect you like that. And he looked at me, and he went back, and he did the same thing. And now I'm going like, what are you doing? And he did it a third time. And I swear that cat was showing me, you take this fence down right now. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
it was such
a weird experience to interact with an animal that young that seemed to be so powerful.
Uh-huh.
So I disconnected it, and so I ended up with all these other cats. He went over there and said, hey, come on this way. He brought them all back. So I ended up with 11 cats at one time.
I think they have a little radio system of their own where they get on the air and announce it.
I mean, the dog was running the entire yard when they first came here. He was, you know, I was letting him out every day. We were going out in the front yard and play, you know. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden there's a cat there, and I'm going, I don't want to let the dog out, because the dog saw the cat and was like, ah, and I'm going, what are you doing? You know, oh, my God, a cat, oh. You know, so even with a dog in the yard, it wasn't a deterrent.
No.
Go figure. So
how long did you have that cat?
Andrew?
The orange one, yeah.
I had I had him for many, many years. He was totally mystical. He actually got hit by a car, and I almost saw it. I don't even want to explain it. But
no.
He was, the vet said, the only thing I can do is stabilize him, but I don't know that he's going to make it. So I went and I got different gemstones. I said to the vet, I said, okay, so get him stabilized, and then what is the first thing that we have to heal? And he said, a circulatory system. And I said, okay, so then I go and I get gems and stones and stuff that fixed circulatory. And God bless him, he worked with me. And so we put the stones around him, and he's at the vet's office, and, you know, he's very, very bad off. Put the stones around him, and the next day the vet calls me. He says, well, I actually was in there, because I kept going back. And he says, I don't even know how to explain this, he says, but his circulatory system is stabilized and is coming back. And I said, okay, so what do we have to do next? You know? And so each procedure that the vet would have initiated, if the vet had any idea of what to do, that's what we did. And he ended up having a obviously damage done, but, you know, he healed completely. And then I had another cat who they didn't know what to do with him. And he said to me, go get your stones.
You had him sold.
Well, one day they called me from the vet's office, and they said they had gotten a kitten that was very bad off, and there wasn't anything. This was the staff called me. He wasn't even in the office. And they said, is there anything you can do? And I happened to have a psychic friend that wanted to begin working with animals. And so I called her. I said, look, this is a situation. See what you can do long distance, like Gene Rockefeller would do now. Yeah. And so this cat that was, when the vet left at night, was like blind, deaf, and dying. When he came in the morning, the cat was running around in the cage. And it was like he's going like, what's happened to this kid? Because he was so stunned. And Janice, the girl that called me, she said, I called Nancy. So I said to Janice, well, what did the vet say to the owners? You know? Yeah. I told you the cat was going to die, and now it's running around like nothing happened to it. And it was in a pretty horrific accident, right? And so Janice is laughing. She says, well, he said it was a miracle. I said, he didn't mention my names or my rocks. And she said, no. I said, well, at least he didn't take credit for it. He gave it up to God. I have had a lot of magical things happen with just healing with minerals and herbs, and you know, I make these gem elixir things that, you know, are just amazing. That was all before shungite. Now with shungite, it's like off the truth. Oh God, you already got all sorts of things that can do anything you need it to do. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I should write a book just about my, but you know, I can't read anything where there's an animal involved in it, because there's always death involved.
I can't handle that, yes. Yeah. I understand that.
So I can't read, I mean, I won't even watch that Finding Nemoy. You know, the fishy thing, the Disney cartoon thing. And somebody said, well, they find him. And I said, yeah, but who dies in the beginning of the movie? And they looked at me and said, the mother. I said, exactly.
Oh, I couldn't watch that either.
Hey, I got burnt by Bambi.
Oh, that was so bad. Why would they do that to little kids?
I don't know. I have no conception.
I was traumatized by Bambi.
Absolutely. And good, and Old Yeller.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing. I cannot believe.
See, I had done a good job of putting that out of my mind. Thanks a lot.
Well, because when you're watching the movie as a little kid, that golden dog was just, oh my God, you fell in love with the dog before you're 10 minutes into the movie, right?
Right, right.
And then, of course, there's death. And I got a dog that looks just like Old Yeller.
Oh, man.
You know, and when he showed up, I said, you got to be my last dog because, you know, you're just too perfectly Old Yeller. So I made sure he got his rabies shots because if you remember, that's what killed Old Yeller was rabies. I don't even remember what killed her.
I tried hard to forget.
Oh, my God. But I have never forgiven those people that put me through that trauma of those two movies as a child.
Yeah. That was awful.
I just can't even imagine what they were thinking.
I cried for years over those shows.
I still cry.
I do too.
I see Bambi, I get
deer. We had a neighbor when the kids were growing up. We lived in Lansing, Michigan, and we had a neighbor who was a deer hunter. He would go out and kill his deer and come home and hang the deer on the garage where they had the basketball hoop. And it was right outside my kitchen window. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. The things I went through every time he got a killing.
Oh, my God. That's really rude of that bastard.
Awful. Yeah, I told him that, too.
How old were you when you told it to him?
when I told him he's a bastard?
I mean, were you an adult or did you see this as a kid?
No, I was an adult. I had kids. Yes.
Oh.
And they'd go out there, and the first time, of course, they're all traumatized to hell. And I'm already traumatized trying to be brave and say Tim's a hunter and he does that so he can have food to put in his freezer. And I'm still thinking, you freaking prick. Why do you do this? Hang it right where we're seeing it.
Because that made him more of a man.
Oh, bullshit.
Oh,
now I'm riled up.
Okay, this is a safe sweat show. We don't like to get into these conversations.
You know, we don't. Let's change it.
We're going to change.
Change the topic.
Change the subject. Okay, so we have some subjects that we could go to. Do you want to go to the Monsanto thing, or do you want to go to the Barron Trump thing?
Well, why don't we start out telling them about that Avaaz? Is it eight? Is that how you say it?
Oh! I don't know. I didn't know what it was. Yeah, that thing. Okay. What happened was that Walt put up on Facebook, a posting regarding this group of people that. It's called AVAAZ. It's actually AVAAZ.org. You can find them. And that started myself, and then I dragged Dolly into it, looking at these people because they're pretty impressive as an activist group.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, so what did you find out about them?
Well, they've got members all over the world, and they do investigations. They're people, they are not self-driven. They are their organization people's driven. If somebody finds something they're upset with, like the Monsanto that we're going to talk about, they write in and say, look, this is my issue with Monsanto, and then they get the people who are interested in working on Monsanto together in their organization, their peoples, and they investigate. And I mean, they investigate right down to the crook's bottom back tooth that needs pulled. That's how much they investigate. And so, I didn't get far enough to find out. I think to be a member, you have to pay a due, but I didn't get that far. So, because that's where they get their money from, the people who want to support them and from their members. And they hire top end lawyers to take cases to court even after they've gathered all their information. And they'll tackle any issue at all. Any issue. Poverty. Monsanto. Any issue that you can come up with. City politicians. Things like that.
Somebody that had a local problem, you know, they wanted to get this one company to stop dumping crap into the river, that one person could actually go to these people and then get other people that will help them deal with this problem. And then if it gets so that they have enough information to present to in a legal concept, then they can get the lawyers involved and take these people to court. Is that the way it works?
Yeah. So that's why I put that little reminder to myself, 5G in Avaaz. Could Avaaz group work on the 5G issue?
Maybe they are. I didn't have, I didn't find it to be the easiest website to navigate.
Oh, I didn't either, Nancy. I had a hell of a time.
And I appreciate you taking the time to do that, because when I got on it, I'm like, they need work on this website. I don't know where I'm supposed to go or what I'm supposed to do.
And it repulsed me. That's part of the reason I was having trouble reading it. When I open it up, there's something about the website that just made me go, I don't want to see that. But I made myself do it. And I copied and pasted into a Word document so I could make the letters bigger because I couldn't read it. So I did that in order to read about it. They do need somebody to, maybe that's a suggestion we should make. Get a real webmaster to make their site more appealing and easier to navigate. But it's worth it.
Yeah, they do need some help there. What I did was I just decided that I knew you were looking into the organization itself, and I didn't want to.
You shit.
I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'll stick Dolly on it.
I'll stick Dolly on it.
Better think I'm looking into it, too.
Well, I didn't want to duplicate our efforts. okay, but what I did was I went and I actually looked at the case, the Monsanto case.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's difficult because it's going to be me reading what happened. But Dolly, when you listen to what these people encountered, you probably know some of it, but I went and actually, you know, what is the case about? And
I just read the thing that Walt sent.
Right. And I will say that, you know, they do go to court, and they actually get a win. But before we get to that discussion, I'm going to pull up the, I hope I'm going to pull up. Where is it? Okay. Here it is. All right. All right, now this was from TheGuardian.com, and it was done just before they actually went to the court. So they don't know what happens when they're writing this, okay? It's a few days before they do it. It says, a U.S. court will today hear a request from Monsanto for access to a huge batch of internal communications by Aves. In a move that the campaign group says could have grave repercussions for online activism and data privacy. Monsanto is seeking the release of all lobby documents, emails, correspondence, and notes without limitation where the firm or its herbicide ingredients, glyphosate have been mentioned. Can you imagine? Can you even get your head around that?
No, I did read that part, and I thought, oh, how? It would take them forever.
Well, that's what they said. They said this would include personal information about its employees, as well as the email addresses for more than 4 million signatories to petitions against Monsanto's GM and Roundup policies. Okay. The
yeah.
Emma Rube Sachs,
Fifth
yeah,
Avenue.
Yeah, yeah, Ruby Sachs. The group's deputy director told The Guardian that if it was successful, Monsanto's suit would have a chilling effect on the group's activism. Our staff are already unsure about what to write down and what not to write down, she said. Our partners are nervous that anything they say to us could be turned over. Our members are writing us saying they're afraid their data will be handed over. We are doing our best not to let it slow us down, but at the end of the day, there is now this scary cloud hanging over our organization. A victory for Monsanto in today's hearing would cost the online advocacy group thousands of person hours of work time and hundreds of thousands of dollars, according to Aves's lawyers. It could have had a different name. This is a hard name to pronounce.
I say Avaz because there's two A's, and that usually goes into ah.
Yeah, Avaz.
Yeah.
A-V-A-A-Z. Mm-hmm. Anyway, those guys. It could even raise the prospect of a migration out of online activism by campaigners concerned about corporate surveillance they fear. But Monsanto argues that it's merely following standard procedure to uncover links between Avaz and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma sufferers that is being settled in another lawsuit. So this other lawsuit talking about the connection between glyphosate, fate, or whatever it is. Why do I can't, I see, I don't like these words, so I can't get them into my head. I don't want to give them any energy.
When it comes out.
Yeah, Roundup stuff, okay? Okay, now, this is another lawsuit from people that are saying that they have gotten lymphoma and other cancers from Roundup, the chemical in it, right? So, because of this, they are now going against an activist group because the activist group is bringing in information like why and the studies that say that this is cancergenic. You know, I mean, it's like, wow. The community itself didn't do anything except report what is being reported in this other, you know, that is being used by this other suit, and they go after them. So Monsanto's vice president for global strategy said the firm had itself complied with court orders to release 10 million documents in the past and called claims that it was seeking personal information from Avaz employees completely false. If they wish to redact email addresses, can you imagine? Oh, yeah, give us all these emails, and you take the time to make sure that you have redacted the information, the personal information.
Oh, they wanted way more than that even.
Oh, it's just crazy.
It's just that proves how threatened Monsanto is, and that leads you to, because all the frickin' politicians and the dirty guys are involved with Monsanto, because Monsanto fills their pockets very nicely with green stuff, and that proves how scared these guys are really going right now. They are frickin' scared out of their minds. So they demand these things thinking the judge would never turn them down, things that are impossible for anyone to get. And then I love what the judge did, but I won't give it away. Are you muted?
Thank you. Monsanto filed its request shortly after a bitter European Union regulatory battle ended with its license for glyphosate, the core ingredient in Roundup, being extended by just 5 years rather than the 15 years originally sought by the European Commission. Okay, so they're trying to make Roundup acceptable for European Union nations, okay? And this is where they started to find out that this activist group was putting together all this information because the EU people that were against it were using that information. So that's how the activist group got, you know, noticed by Monsanto. And as best as I can. And as the issues were debated, the firm found itself dogged by allegations emerging from the Monsanto papers, unsealed documents from a U.S. lawsuit that led to a hearing in the European Parliament. All right, and the allegations were ultimately dismissed by the commission, which then went on to declare Roundup to be safe, but only for 5 years, not the 15 years, so I guess it's a semi-victory. And, of course, the Avaz people had contributed with 2 million-strong petition to that particular lawsuit at that point. So it's like, they're being attacked. Monsanto is being attacked on all sorts of different ways because, good Lord, this stuff is incredibly, and I heard just recently that it doesn't leave the ground for 100 years.
Oh, man.
You know, I mean, it's a cancerogenic. It's going to cause all sorts of problems, and
it already has.
And it already has. Yeah.
Yes.
So, okay. So, do you want to? Do you have Walt's the thing that Walt posted?
Do
you
wanna... I think I do. Hold on. Let me see. Where did I put that? I think I kept it just in case we. No, that's their website.
I actually.
Oh,
have...
that's Trump. I got it in my email, I think. Oh,
no,
there's
it was,
my
it was
Kohl's thing. No, I had it in my email. See, I get all sorts of these kind of emails.
Oh, so you know about
Walt, here we go.
Okay.
I think the tide is turning on Monsanto. Here's the letter. Dear Avazers, our hearing just ended. See, I can't read. Let me copy and paste it into a Word document so I can read it, because it's really good. Where to contact? Okay. I don't need that. I don't need that. Okay. Come on. Copy. Word. It's my computer's so slow, but I refuse to use that new one that I can't figure out. I'll do it when I move to Sherry and Shannon's house. I have to fix the font to get bigger. Bear with me, folks. It's worth it. Put it to 16 and I can see it. Okay, here we go. Our hearing just ended, and the judge absolutely, and this word is in all caps, destroyed Monsanto's subpoena on Avaz. He said the subpoena would have a tremendous chilling effect, that's in quotation marks, saying, and this is in quotation marks, no member would want to have their privacy and their activity known, end of those marks, and actually gave Monsanto a lecture on democracy and free speech. 2 exclamation marks. Avaz members in the courtroom spontaneously broke into applause and huge smiles at his words. Here's a quick video. Oh, I didn't see the video. Well, anyway, here's a quick video filmed minutes ago from our campaign director, Lane Keith, on the steps of the courthouse. This subpoena was terrifying and would have had Avaz spend months and hundreds of thousands of dollars digging up and handing over to Monsanto everything anyone on our team ever said or wrote about them for, in all capitals, years, including even the email addresses and identities of our members who had sent messages to officials about Monsanto. See, they could never get all that crap together, and Monsanto knows it. Even worse, lawyers told us that courts in New York tend to, in all capital letters, these next two words, automatically grant. Let me read from the beginning. Even worse, lawyers told us that courts in New York tend to automatically grant requests like this because usually more info means more justice. But then our community got involved. Over 200,000 of us donated, and we hired the best lawyer in the business. Andrew, I don't know how to say it, it is C-E-L-L-I, who has taken on cases like this before and won. He and his team worked with the Avaz team to write a ridiculously great takedown of the Monsanto subpoena. It's long and legalistic, but if you speak that language, it's a thing of beauty. You can read it here. Monsanto flew in a top lawyer, a man who's defended everything from asbestos to lead and arsenic. And why would they know about those lawyers so much? They've used them before. But between our briefs and the powerful oral arguments, the judge was convinced and took the incredible, in all caps, rare step of throwing out the, all caps, entire subpoena. He threw out the whole subpoena. Normally, they just narrow the scope of the subpoena to something more reasonable, but the judge couldn't find anything reasonable in Monsanto's claims about Avaaz. Avaaz members, team, and lawyers celebrating on the courthouse steps. I think there was a picture of them doing that. It's a moment to celebrate, but it may not be over. Monsanto can still appeal or come at us another way. But we've got an amazing win and precedent set and an amazing legal team. And as ever, an amazing movement that will stand by, stand up, and speak truth to power when it threatens. The purpose of these big legal attacks is to scare us. I have tears right now as I think about how, with the Avaaz community at our back, I really don't have to fear stuff like this, because even the most powerful actors in this world are not more powerful than the truth, than the power of good people coming together to work for everything we love, than the power of all of us in this incredible movement. With immense gratitude, Rickon and the whole Avaaz team. P.S. In another amazing example of our movement, an Avaaz member wrote in response to our fundraiser, suggesting that the team reach out to Bayer, who are buying Monsanto, to ask them to drop this attack. He then took the initiative to write personally to both me and the CEO of Bayer. The CEO of Bayer actually called him hours later, saying he'd love to talk to me, so we're talking on Monday. No idea yet what will come of it, but another example of the ridiculously wonderful movement that we get to be a part of. Thanks so much for being you. And I want to read this last thing. Avaaz is a 47 million person global campaign network that works to ensure that the views and values of the world's people shape global decision making. And in parentheses, Avaaz means voice or song in many languages. Avaaz members live in every nation of the world. Our team is spread across 18 countries on 6 continents and operates in 17 languages. Learn about some of Avaaz's biggest campaigns here or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. And you can do that at avaaz.org. There you go.
I just posted that in the chat.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it truly is an example. I mean, when I went over there and tried to sign up and become a member, they told me I was a member.
They did?
Yeah. Whoops. Well, you know, years ago, when we were with Bill Brockbrader's group, which was 2012. Okay, we started in 2012. We ended up getting together as a group out of there and started the ODD group, Operational Defiant Disorder Group, and made a Facebook group because our intention, we actually have a website, our intention was to try to find organizations like this and bring all these organizations to one hub so that people knew where to go and could trust the organization because they've already been vetted by us, you know? And so I set it all up, started looking at it, and I was totally overwhelmed by the number of organizations worldwide. There are tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of organizations doing similar things to what this one is doing, with great integrity, with a huge amount of just pure heart involved in it. And so I said, this is not something somebody can organize. It's way too big. So I suspect that maybe that's when I got involved with them. You know, like I say, that if I've been a member for a while, it probably started back then, because that's when I was looking at these different groups. And there are a tremendous number of groups out there. And remember, our position here is that we do these shows to influence the subconscious of the collective consciousness of humanity. And every time one of these groups gets together and every time they start doing something, that's what they're doing. And then on the top of it, they do 3D work. They get money and they hire lawyers. Awesome. Yep. Awesome.
Yeah, well, you found a good group for the first one you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully maybe we can, you know, get somebody to come and talk to us.
You know, of us people?
Yeah, I'd love to, you know, bring them on and just talk to them. But we'll see.
Well, you're the good one with the nice words. I used to could do nice words, but anymore I just don't give a shit. I just say it like I see it. I gave up giving a shit when I quit working. Well, I didn't have to be diplomatic anymore.
You know, when I look, you know, people say, well, why don't you bring in guests? Well, first off, because I've had horrendous experience with guests. And Dolly can attest to it. But the other thing is that a vast majority of these people that are out there already have videos and formats where their presentation is being made. And we're too little to give them a big boost, you know what
right.
I'm saying? To kind of like be worth their time, in my opinion. And
right.
I'm very, very cognizant of time. I'm old enough, you're old enough to think time might be worth something.
Yes.
But what we can do is we can talk about them and we can introduce them to other people, and hopefully, you know, more people will begin to see the good side of life. You know, what's really being done behind the scenes. I mean, everything that you see being done that you would consider positive is only being done positive because little groups got together and are changing the collective consciousness of humanity so that we can, you know, basically go to a new reality. And our new reality is we're going to have a song because it's the top of the hour.
Oh, I thought we are.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's already the top of the hour.
I thought you were going to make up a theme song.
Oh, well, I could do that, too.
Yes,
you know,
you could.
I've written songs. I've actually used to play the guitar and write songs.
Well, for goodness sake.
I was a time of Buffy St. Marie and Carole King and all those people. They weren't even there when I was getting into that business. And there was a company that had just started out, A&M Records, in Boston. And somehow or another, somebody, because I was at the University of Massachusetts, doing a little bit of, you know, little club playing, you know, we just, not anything big, not being a performer or anything, just playing music. And they contacted me, this guy came to me, and they wanted to give me a record contract. You know?
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm like, at this time, let me see, I would have been 19. And it was one of those choices that you make in life, you know, that becomes like really big. You know it's big when you're making it. And
yeah.
Their requirement was that I was going to have to leave college and go into become professionally trained as a musician.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at it and I said, a company that is just starting out, that may not make it, or stay in college. And I wasn't driven to be a performer. You know, I just was doing it because that's what I did. And so I politely, you know, thanked them, but didn't do it. And they became one of the biggest music business things in the world.
Jeez.
You know, I probably would have been propelled to the top echelons of folk music at the time, right?
Uh-huh.
All those drugs, all that money, man, I wouldn't have been here today, honey.
You probably wouldn't.
I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it. Anyway, okay, so we're going to do Disturbance's Sounds of Silence from the 70s.
I love Sounds of Silence.
I know you do. And it's 4 minutes, so take your time.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
All right.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its scenes while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking. People hearing. The sound
Now, for those people that don't know this, The Sounds of Silence was actually done by Simon and Garfunkel back in the 70s. And people don't seem to realize that, the younger people, and they think that this is the only version of it. But when I was in college and Simon and Garfunkel came out with that song, I got to tell you, I must have listened to that for 6-7 hours. Over and over and over again. The whole album was just incredible. It was an amazing experience. I actually saw them in concert at the University of Massachusetts, and it was really pretty cool because somebody who I knew, I don't remember who it was, got a blind date with Paul Simon's brother. And because she was our friend, we ended up getting in the first row. So I'm there right, you know, and the stage was raised about, I guess, about 3 feet off the ground, you know, but there they were right in front of me. What an experience. Just awesome. Awesome. So
who was it that sang that one you just played? Was that? Who was that?
Well, all I know, it's the group Disturbance.
Disturbance, oh, okay. I liked the guys. I don't usually like that kind of voice, but I liked it.
Well, I've listened to some of their other stuff that I don't like.
I can imagine.
Yeah, sometimes
he did that song justice.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Powerful.
Yeah.
And it gives you a different feeling than when Garfunkel and Simon did it.
Yeah.
You know, it was well, this version is a hard version. It's like, be careful.
Yeah.
You know, whereas their version was, we're going to get you in the end. You know?
This version gets me all charged up.
I know, yeah, yeah. Where are they? Where's the jails?
Right.
We'll get them in the jails. We're going to take care of it. Oh, and, you know, I gotta tell you this story because people... Well, they, you know, I've got some wonderful people that follow me and listen to me, but as soon as I say, oh, I like Trump, oh my God, they're all upset with me. You know? And I just want to explain something, that I was not a fan of Trump's. I couldn't listen to the man for 2 minutes. I'd get physically ill. And something changed. He's not the same guy that was the campaign guy. And I, like I say, I didn't go Googles for him. I'm still not Googles for him. But the database that's growing saying that this man is not the doofus that everybody thinks he is. He's a master strategician. But there's a group behind him. You know, he's not doing this by himself. He's like the figurehead. All of the stuff that's happening would have taken thousands and thousands of people to put together to do. I mean, they got 43,000 sealed indictments. Okay? Now, those indictments, for the most part, came from information supplied from the NSA. And that was through Snowden. The analysis done on that was done by people that, those of you that have been following any of this, I call the Oath Takers or anonymous group that are hackers, not necessarily Oath Takers, but they're Oath Takers in that they're trying to make things right. They saw something wrong. An Oath Taker is somebody that took an oath to protect this Constitution of the United States, which is any military or government official, federal official. That happened to be good guys that never, you know, really took the oath and meant it. Not, you know, just citing words. But anyways, NSA information. Now, I love the way the universe works. I was talking to my friend Sandy, who doesn't like Trump at all, but is willing to listen to me. I have friends that won't listen, but she was willing to listen. So then a couple days after we had the conversation, she sends me an email. And it's a New York top, I think it was a New York, I don't know, what New York, one of the New York papers, Post or Times, that was a post, somebody, what do they call it? They post, they add, you know, it's a person that posts something in the, and they print it in the paper, op-ed, that's what they call it. And this guy claimed to be one of the insiders in Trump's organization, and that they're really working against the president to protect the country, and, you know, goes on and on and on about silly things like we keep papers from him so he can't sign them. I mean, ridiculous stuff. And so she sends it to me, and in an email, and I like scan it, and I go, well, I don't need to look at this, because anybody that won't tell you who their name is, won't right. stand up there, I'm not going to listen to you, right? Mm-hmm. So then I go to the very next email, and one of my customers said, and listeners said, Nancy, you might be interested in this. And I click on this YouTube.
Same thing.
No.
Oh, really?
This is a guy who I'd never seen before, who is reading from a post. I mean, you know, it's a written post. Somebody blogged it and put their name.
Oh,
right.
Well,
okay.
Yes.
And so this guy is on YouTube, and he said, and he's obviously a Trump supporter. He's got a big Trump thingy behind him on the wall, you know. And mm-hmm. he says, now this isn't vetted. I'm taking it from one guy. He said, but something in me tells me that this is the truth. And he proceeds to read this article, and I'll get the link. I'll find the link. I'll get it. And this, he reads this article, and the article is written by a man who is saying that I have been given permission to release this information to the world, and this is the only place you're going to see it, you know? And so he proceeds to tell the story of what really happened in Helsinki when Putin and Trump got together, all right? Because we see the press conference and, you know, all the public stuff they were showing. But while they were there, Trump and Putin met together personally, no staff, nobody around them. And supposedly what happened was that Putin explained in detail the amount of information that the Russians have on American politicians, the cabal, the corporate offices, the financial office, everything. Now, this guy that was reading this article, he's just an average guy, but it seems right to him. It felt right to him. When I was in the military, now I keep having to bring this back because this is my experience. My job as the Soviet expert on the Soviet's ability to conduct what's called electronic warfare, which means their ability to listen in on your... And this, remember, this is back in the 70s, to listen in on all of your radio, telephone conversations. They didn't even have, you didn't have emails and all that happening, but they had just an enormous amount of capability to use electronic warfare, including things like, you know, technical things, you know, like listening things that you wouldn't even believe. Well, one of my jobs is to figure out what are they targeting? What are they taking this massive organization and what are they looking at? And when I did the analysis on it, working with NSA, it turned out that they were looking at industrial and financial organizations. They were not looking at the U.S. military. Yes, they were looking at it, but the vast amount of their resources were tied up looking at commerce and economy. And when I saw this, and I've been studying them I was an expert out of college. So to me, the fact that they were looking at that made me go, what are they looking at? And that's when I started looking at my own country differently. So for somebody who doesn't know anything about the backstory to say that he believes that the Soviet, well, the Soviets, then the Russians now, could listen in on every telephone conversation, every satellite phone, every fax, every email, the everything that you said, whether it was encrypted or not, that they could have that information, that they're bigger and better than the NSA ever thought of being. I know it's true. And supposedly what Putin did was he handed over to Trump, it was like tetrabytes of information, many, many, many. That's like an extraordinary amount of information on everybody that did anything wrong. They, most, a lot of it was free, open source, but some of it was actually encrypted communications. So in that case, the Russians gave them the actual encrypted messages, then showed them what they had deciphered, in other words, unencrypted, so that this is what these things were saying, and then they turned over the actual code that broke the encryption so that the Americans could duplicate it. Here's the code. You see if it breaks that and if it says this. So they're all up to impeach and pull the 26th Amendment out and, you know, get Pence to be the president and all of this BS about Trump. And this guy has absolute proof of everything that we've ever said about these people. So somebody said, well, how could it be put into a court of law? Well, yes, it can. Because once, it's an odd thing, but once a... Oh, I'm sorry, I've got you muted. That's what you're saying? I'm sorry, Dolly.
Jeez.
Am I still muted? No, you're not. I've unmuted you, but I apologize.
Well, I've been trying to tell you I have that site. And I can post it in the chat if you want me to about the Putin-Trump thing.
Oh, yes, please. Please.
Okay, now go ahead.
You could have done that. No, but what I'm saying here is that the odd thing was is here's this guy that's saying that Trump is a crazy person in an email. The next email provides me with information that says, oh, they're setting you guys up again. You know, these people are setting you up to think that the man is an nincompoop. You're going to spend all your efforts trying to get him, you know, taken out of office. And in the meantime, all they're doing is buying time to be able to set all this thing in motion. You know, because this happened in July when they got those particular pieces of documents. So there is no way that anybody who has done anything illegal and treasonous to the United States is going to get away, in my opinion.
I loved it. I was so excited when I read that. I really had to calm myself down. I mean, and, not read it, watched it.
And I believe it's true. Because
oh,
I know they have the capability of doing that. They were the best in the world at this business. You know, and
that's why nobody wanted Trump to meet with Putin.
Oh, that was what he was his position. He said, why would so many people go out of the way? They were talking about impeaching him because he wanted to meet with Putin.
Well,
you know, I mean, they were crazy about him not supposed to go. And I don't know if you've heard this one because I didn't. Walt and I talked about it, but we didn't really stress it. Although Walt references it quite often. When he flew to Singapore.
Trump?
When Trump flew to Singapore.
Okay.
To meet with the North Korean president.
Oh, that crazy guy?
Well, he's not crazy at all. He's not crazy at all. He was being manipulated by the cabal, the deep, dark people that were in control of North Korea, making them the boogeyman.
Okay.
What happened was that Trump and the North Korean were making all this noise about this terrible thing that was going to happen, you know, we're going to go to war with you and blah, 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 you know. And while they were doing that and everybody was looking at them, a group of, let's say highly talented people took out the cabal in North Korea physically. So now all of a sudden the president is no longer, I mean, the president of North Korea is no longer being threatened by these people, and that's why that Trump and he met in Singapore and were able to meet, and now North Korea and South Korea are dancing together. I mean, it's just astounding. But on his way to Singapore, they flew a second plane.
Who they?
Trump. Trump was on Air Force One, okay?
Okay.
And they took another plane, another Air Force One kind of plane.
So Trump took a different airplane.
No, he took Air Force One. But Air Force One, instead of going from, like, Anchorage directly over to Singapore, Air Force One went way south and took this really strange route to put almost doubled the time to get to Singapore. And the first one flew the direct route that would have been the normal route, and they tried to shoot it down with a missile. They were prepared for it.
Is that the Hawaii thing?
No, this is a totally different story.
Different? Oh, my God.
Yeah, there was a missile shot at them. The missile was seen. There was a lot of, what's that missile thing? And then the story started unraveling. It's not gotten much press, but I believe it's true, because there's been a number of attempts against the president, and he does not want that known. But I'm telling you guys.
Yeah. Well, we won't tell anyone.
Don't tell anybody else.
Okay. It's a secret.
It's a secret. But, so, I mean, there's all sorts of things that are happening that people don't even see. And my feeling is that they, with what the Russians gave them, there's no way that they can escape legal justice court.
By they, this time, you mean the cabal?
I mean Hillary Clinton. I mean George Soros.
Yeah.
You know, I mean 43,000 others. Now, understand that in a federal, the federal district court system in a given year, you will have an average of 1,000 sealed indictments system-wide. Since January of last year, 2017, there is now 43,000 sealed indictments. Some of those are probably just the normal everyday ones. So take 1,000 out. Take 2,000 out. You've still got a huge number, thousands. Imagine how many we're talking. We're talking 43,000 sealed indictments against pedophilia, against being traitors to the country, being, God only knows what's in these things. You know, so I'm still fully optimistic that we're on track to see just a complete turnaround of everything. And I'm going to say that the books we're going to talk about now are very strange, but the third book, where the Republic is lost, is absolutely the opposite. The Republic will be returned to us. So at this point, because we only got about a half an hour left, we got to talk about those books, because that was one of the weirder stories that's come up in a long time.
Well, I just want to say one thing. People just, they don't like Trump. They say, well, he's not keeping all his promises and all this stuff to get elected. Well, there's things going on behind the scenes that it's none of your damn business what's going on, because if you knew, then so would the bad people that they're going after. There has to be some covert actions at times to catch the bad people. So I just want to say that.
Good point. Good point. Okay, so what I did was I took and put up it's on the chat, and it's a poster, and if you're watching YouTube, it's going to be up on the screen. But you want to tell about the bear and Trump's marvelous underground journey?
No.
Okay.
I just cursorily read about it because I was focusing on the Avar thing.
Okay.
But I saw that, I saw where I was objecting to what they were saying. I was thinking just the opposite was going to happen too. And, my God, it just went right out of my freaking mind. The time travel. The time travel. Yes, I think there's time travel involved. That's all I have to say.
Well, I don't know if it's time travel or a Mandela effect, but it sure is one of the weirder stories. I mean, hey, not as far out there as the John Kennedy Jr. Alive story, but this is pretty good. And if you haven't heard it yet, just don't, you know, just sit back and listen to the data like we did and see what you think. If it's time traveling or premonition or whatever it is. I'm having a strange thing in that one of the articles, oh, there it is, Newsweek. So Newsweek, this is an article by Newsweek. And I'm going to just read a little bit of it here. Okay. Ingersoll Lockwood, an American political writer, lawyer, and novelist, combined a unique mixture of science fiction and fantasy into his novels from the late 1800s. Two of his most popular works of literature were illustrated children's stories focusing on a peculiar fictional character whose name rings a bell in 2017. The name, Baron Trump. Now remember, Trump's son is Baron Trump, but he spells it with two R's. This one is one R. Trump, an aristocratically wealthy young man living in Castle Trump, is the protagonist of Lockwood's first two fictional novels, The Travels and Adventures of Little Baron Trump and His Wonderful Dog Bulger, and Baron Trump's Marvelous Underground Journey. The little boy, who has an unending imagination and a very active brain, is bored with the luxurious lifestyle he has grown so accustomed to. In a twist of fate, Trump visits Russia to embark on an extraordinary adventure that will shape the rest of his life. All right, so this is the first two, and that's what I want to talk about now, okay?
Yeah.
Because there's some incredible connections to be made to the first family of the United States and Lockwood's novels from the turn of the 19th century. For starters, the main character's name is the same as President Donald Trump's son, albeit spelt differently. Trump's adventures begin in Russia and are guided thanks to the directions provided by, I love this, by the master of all masters, a man named Don.
I know, I saw that. Oh my God.
Got it. The master of all masters, a man named Don. Okay, so before leaving for his voyage through the unknown, Trump is told of his family's motto, "The pathway to glory is strewn with pitfalls and dangers." Illustrations from the novel depict Trump dressed in lavish old-fashioned clothing and jewelry as he departs from Castle Trump and begins his voyage heading to Russia to locate an entrance to alternate dimensions. Okay, now right now I want you to look at the post that I made in chat, or if you YouTube the screen, because you're going to see that a picture that shows a drawing that's in the book, and it shows the attire and the dog and Baron. And then if you take a close look at that face, in the face of Baron Trump, all I'm saying is, can you see it?
Oh, I saw it immediately, and I thought, is this real?
Isn't that crazy?
Is somebody making up an elaborate story and saying this is coming from 1800s?
I mean,
it's uncanny how much it looks like them.
I know. And the fact that I could find a picture that had the same, you know, his eyes are looking the same way. I mean, everything about the face is the same position.
Yeah.
I mean, even that is magical. Because there's a lot of versions of Baron's face, but you don't, that particular one matches exactly the drawing in the book. And it's uncanny how close it is.
Yeah.
Spooky, actually. Anyway, so back to what I was saying. So where was I? But Lockwood's, now they're getting into the president thing. Okay, I don't want to get into the president thing yet. All right, let me look at my notes and see if I found anything. Okay. Now, the boy learned... Okay, let's see. Okay, right, here. Okay. The underground journey, which follows the wealthy boy and his dog as they leave Castle Trump to embark on a journey underground to explore the theory that the earth is not solid but inhabited by people who were chased underground by terrible disturbances. Now, that in and of itself is one... I mean, how many times have you heard about the... what's their names? The ones that live on inner Earth. It keeps going whoosh back through my head. But the inner
Earth, I don't know what they're called because I've seen lots of different beings there.
Yeah, but the inner Earth people, right? So
mm-hmm.
That's what they're talking about, the inner Earth people. And that in of itself is like, wow, in the 1800s they thought about this stuff? That's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
You know, even in a fiction. So the boy learned of this theory of the, you know, inner Earth through a manuscript given to him by his father called World Within a World, which was written by a celebrated thinker and philosopher named Don Fum, Donfum. Before leaving Castle Trump in the marvelous underground journey, Baron's father refers to Don as a safe and trusty counselor, and reminds him of the Trump motto, the pathway to glory is strewn with pitfalls and dangers. As Baron goes on in search for the portal to the world within a world, with Don as his guide, his travels take him to the Ural Mountains in Russia. you can't make this stuff up. So little Baron Trump and his dog are guided by Don to Russia. While all of this is fascinating, the one heck of a coincidence is Lockwood's third book that really throws everyone for a loop. And that book is called The Last President. And it opens in New York City, opens in New York City on November 3rd, 1896, with the announcement of the newly elected President of the United States, who happens to be an outsider candidate. The candidate who represents the common man who would liberate the people from the grip of the bankers and undo the bad business of years of unholy union between barterers and sellers of human toil and the lawmakers of the land, a.k.a. an anti-establishment candidate. I loved that. do you want to say something about the... About either of those books or what else they say, because I'm thinking...
No, because I didn't delve into it very deep, and what you've said already is what I picked up from it. I don't know much more on them.
Shoot.
I think I have it up here. Let's see. Did an author? Yes. Yes, I have that up.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at right now. In The Last President doesn't follow the same fictional narrative of Lockwood's previous novels, though the links to Trump are once again abundantly clear. The president's hometown of New York City is fearing the collapse of the Republic in this book, also titled 1900, immediately following the transition of presidential power. Some Americans begin forming a resistance, protesting what was seen as a corrupt and unethical election process. a filmmaker and Trump supporter named Leigh Scott is now trying to crowdsource funding to create a fantasy feature saying he's a huge fan of trolling. What the hell is that about?
I don't know.
How did that get in there?
I did not get that.
I didn't. I mean,
I didn't understand it because I thought the same thing. What the heck is this?
Right. The book has tons of strange references to the modern day, but we can actually amp that up a bit and put it in things that were only we as Trump supporters and people who are now on the internet all the time really understand and appreciate. And one of the weird things about this whole thing is that the Trump Castle, I think, is it the Trump Castle? But one of the things that he talks about, the building that he talks about, I think it's the Trump Castle. Or maybe they're talking about something in I don't remember, I apologize. I just don't remember.
Here it is. The Fifth Avenue Hotel will be the first to feel the fury of the mob, the novel continues, citing an address in New York City where Trump Tower now stands. Would the troops be in time to save it?
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. I read this stuff and I thought, well, yeah, I don't give it that much credence in Dolly World.
Well, I get fascinated with it because you go, was this man somehow... See, my thing is the collective consciousness. Time doesn't exist.
Uh-huh.
So if we're in an environment right now where the whole Trump saga is dominating everything, you know, some guy writing fiction could have tapped into that whole scenario, even though it's in the future, because time doesn't exist. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-mm.
Okay. When I was writing the 9/11 fiction about the attack on the towers, mm-hmm. It was like I was hearing a story. All right, I'd start writing, and it was like somebody was telling me the story. And yes, the story is extraordinarily accurate as to what actually happened. And yes, I was using research. But I felt like somebody was telling me a story. And then I got to thinking about other fiction writers. Are they actually creating a story, or are they tapping into something else? When you get somebody that writes like Star Trek, and you've got Gene Roddenberry out there, and he's got so many different devices that now are here. We've got cell phones. We've got tricorder type things, all that stuff. Is that being created because of him having a Star Trek story, or is it coming out because that is in the future, that is now, and he's pulling the information and making it, you know, a past thing? See, I'm not so certain that the future doesn't muck with us at the super collective consciousness. Do you understand?
Kinda. It's that time thing again. I get so screwed up in my head when it comes to the time thing.
And that's what, I mean, how we got into this was a little bit of a video. It wasn't very long, but it was hysterical. I loved it. Because what she was doing was she was saying, well, let's just have fun with this, right? And so she starts talking about, you know.
Who's she?
The woman in the YouTube, I don't know if you even saw it, but I saw a YouTube where the woman was talking about this information on Barron.
Oh, no, I didn't see it.
Oh, you
YouTube.
Didn't see it? Oh, God, it was so
no.
funny. And I'll find it. I posted it on Facebook in Cosmic Reality Group. But she was she was going through all this information, and she says, well, it seems to me the only answer is that they were time-tripping, right? Because Barron's picture looks like the same picture. So he goes back into time and tells this guy this story, and the guy actually has a drawing made of what he looked like, right?
Uh-huh.
And she's playing with this. So, but she says, So I know this sounds a little far out there, but let's look at the facts. You know, and the facts are that Donald Trump's father, Fred, had a brother, John, John G. And John G. Trump was a member of, actually was taught and worked at MIT for many, many years. MIT is Massachusetts Institute for Technology, highly rated university and think tank type of thing. Okay, so he's works there, all right? And one of the things that confounded me was when I went to find out more about him, Dolly. You would think somebody of his stature that I would have found out a lot more information Googling him, but it was very difficult to find out any information about the man. What I did find out, okay, is that physicist John Trump was a younger brother of Mr. Trump's father, Fred. John passed away in 1985 at the age of 78. He was a professor of engineering at the elite Massachusetts Institute of Technology for 44 years. According to MIT, Professor Trump focused on high voltage phenomenon, electron acceleration, and the interaction of radiation with living and non-living matter. He also designed X-ray generators for cancer therapy.
So he was playing with time travel.
Well, no, not yet. Not yet. But this right here, this guy is so intimately involved in, think about it, interaction of radiation. Radiation, well, that could be EMF, Wi-Fi, with living and non-living matter.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, yes, he got X-ray generators for cancer therapy, but this guy has to have a feeling for how bad EMF, Wi-Fi is, because it is, and he is a, you know, technically a superb scientist. He would have to come to the same conclusion if he's looking for the truth.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, I found that to be very interesting. Then I got really interested in this. During World War II, Professor Trump researched radars for the Allies. When legendary physicist Nikola Tesla died in 1943, Professor Trump was asked by the FBI to examine Tesla's papers and equipment. Now, first off, if he was researching radars, I'm very interested in the fact that he seems to be highly connected. I mean, he must have been massively highly connected because he's the one they call in to look at Tesla's papers. But he's also in researching radars. And the Philadelphia experiment was very concerned with the same thing. So I'm betting that this guy somehow or another was involved in the Philadelphia experiment, because Tesla also was involved in it when it initially began. And he got...
You mean Trump's uncle?
Uncle John.
Uncle John? I got that opinion too.
Did you?
Yes.
There's some kind of a connection there.
Yeah.
So, and Tesla, like I said, Tesla was involved in it, and as was Einstein, but the initial Philadelphia research and experiments, Tesla was hands-on, very much involved with it, to the point that he believed there would be a warping of the time-space continuum. And the first testing that they did was actually on a ship in Brooklyn Navy Yard. He sabotaged the equipment.
Tesla did. Yes, I wanted to make that clear.
Okay. Tesla did. And, of course, it failed. But this guy by the name of John Newman, who was involved in it, basically fired Tesla and pulled out a backup system that he had made.
Right.
You know, so all of a sudden, you know, you made a second one, a backup? Why? So, and that's what generated the first Brooklyn test that was successful, that later on became more complicated when they used a bigger ship in the Philadelphia sound area. So there definitely feels like there's there's something of a connection there. So this Professor Trump comes out and he says, there's nothing in it. It was, you know, just headquarters in it. And you know,
you cut out for a second.
I did.
There was nothing in it. And then what?
There was nothing in it. Oh, in the papers, in all of what he found from when Trump died in 1943. So Tesla. When Tesla died, and John Trump was brought in to look at the papers, and you know, it's likely that a lot of Tesla's papers never were found. There are people still trying to find, a trove of papers from him, but mm-hmm. the papers that they did obtain, John Trump said there was nothing technically important in them. Well, yeah, there damn well was.
Nothing to see here, folks.
Right.
Look at those flock of turtles flying over there. Yeah.
Right. So it also says that Professor Trump co-founded a company making generators for the use in nuclear research, according to MIT archives. But again, if you get somebody I would think there's going to be more information out there. And I, you know, I mean, normally you find it pretty quick, but I didn't find it. So then I said, okay, so what else did he do? Well, he was an electrical engineer with the National Defense Research Committee of the Office of Scientific Research and Development.
So we're still talking about Uncle John.
John. We're talking about John again.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going like, what is this National Defense Research Committee of the Office of Scientific Research and Development? What is this? So I look it up, and I find out that from 1940 to 1941, there was this organization that was developed in order to consolidate and enhance the development of other research. I don't know. It was very vague again. So the guy is obviously connected and rather spooky. Now, he was, John again, was involved with, in 3D known science, a particular generator, that the naysayers want to say, oh, he wasn't working on time machines, he was working on this particular generator. But these things, you know, you don't know what's really propelling the time thing. But anyway, she was having fun with saying that, oh yeah, John Trump gave Tesla's time machine information to Donald Trump. And with Donald Trump and others' resources, they created a time machine. And either Donald Trump or Barron Trump took a ride in the time machine, or somebody else did, but they went to the future and they saw that Hillary Clinton, if elected and be as president of the United States, would create a conflict nuclear with Russia. So Trump dedicated his life in order to beat Hillary so that this doesn't happen.
If anyone did the time travel, I would think it would be Donald Trump, not Barron, because Donald, when he looks at Hillary, you can see the smoke coming from around him from the hate he carries toward her.
Yeah, that is not deniable. Man does not like the woman.
No, he does not.
But, you know, again, I found it to be interesting that people take this kind of a... Who knows if they're telling the truth or not? Who knows if this book even existed before Trump became president? This could be a Mandela effect.
Yeah.
In my
opinion. Or it could just be a made-up story that somebody's trying to sell.
It could be that, too. You know? I just don't know. But it's another one of those. Ever since 2016, when Trump and Hillary began to run against each other, everything is turned into some kind of a comic. It's like the characters are comical.
Well,
the storylines are insane.
They kind of make themselves comical when it comes to each other and their interactions and supposed things that they've done.
I mean, sometimes I wonder, did somebody lace the water with LSD? Everything turns into a cartoon. I mean, you got the president calling the North Korean president a toad.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's there's just so many.
He was acting like a toad.
And then you got, you know, missiles being fired at Hawaii that trips an entire state to tell people to kiss their asses goodbye. There's a missile attack. Oh, no, that didn't really happen. You know, oh, come on,
right.
Please. You know,
yeah.
And then you've got the story that it was a missile attack from a submarine that belongs to a super secret military group that belongs to the cabal that nobody knows about, but don't worry about it because an ET ship shot down the missile and then the Alliance good guys sunk the sub.
And then don't forget to look at those turtles flying overhead.
What turtles flying overhead?
That's just a diversional tactic.
I don't know what it is, but all I know is I've heard some of the more insane. I thought when I got in this, you know, well, it's been at least 40 years, but let's say when the internet started, 92 time frame, I have heard some amazing stories. But the longer that we're here, the more bizarre get the stories.
I know.
Well,
that's
got blue
what the
avian.
Turtles are for. Instead of looking here at this, they tell you to look at the turtles flying overhead over there so that you're not looking at what they really want you to. And there's no freaking turtles flying overhead. It's just diversion.
We live in a very strange
it's
place.
It's crazy. It's just freaking crazy.
It is. It truly is. So I don't know if the Trumps have been time traveling.
If anyone had, I think it would have been the Donald.
Well, I don't think Donald would have put Barron in a time
no,
machine.
No, that's why I say that, because there's no way in hell he'd put Barron in that. No way.
You know, there is the story that Barron has a certain amount of autism.
Yes.
And one of the promises that the president has made is that he will get to the bottom of the
autism,
the vaccinations. He believes it was the vaccinations.
Yes.
That's another thing that, you know, hasn't been talked about, and people are like, why aren't you talking about 9/11? Why isn't there a commission? Why aren't you doing? Well, we don't know that these 43,000 sealed indictments aren't involved in all of that.
Right.
I remember back, oh my gosh, it must have been, I bet it was 2010, and Robert Kennedy Jr. was working with his organization, the Defense something or other, I forget what it is, against the pharmaceutical companies regarding the vaccinations, because there is scientifically a link between vaccinations and autism. But, of course, then there's the opposite that says, no, there isn't. But, you know, it's the two sides of the things. But the scientific, let's say the preponderance of scientific research was indicating that especially it was basically being looked at, the mercury in the vaccinations that was possibly causing autism and, oh, by the way, Alzheimer's. However, there was a court case, and I read about it from, was a member of this group back then, and the court case was found to be that the mercury was causing mental disability in children, and so they would not put mercury in the vaccinations anymore. Okay, this was back in 2010. However, the same group that made that decision said, however, all the vaccinations that have already been made can be dispensed with the mercury, even though they had already just said that it was hurting people, hurting kids. But we're going to use it anyway because we just don't want to throw it out and lose all that money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was the CCD was in, you know, the Center for Diseases.
Diseases, yeah.
They were involved in it. It's just like some of the things that have been done. Well, it's like that, just talking about that case with Monsanto. I mean, it was like, that's ludicrous. How dare you?
Yeah.
You know, and thank God there was a judge there that had the courage to say no.
Yes.
And I think, absolutely, I'm hoping that more and more people are getting the courage to say no.
I think they are. Well, have you watched any of the Kavanaugh persecution? I watched just a little here and a little there, and every time I watched, he really set them on their asses. I like this guy, Kavanaugh.
I don't know who he is or what he's fighting.
He's going for, Trump nominated him for the judicial thing.
Supreme Court?
Yeah. And in his history, Kavanaugh's history, he has tried cases for and against all these different things. And it didn't matter who the person was that was being on trial. He went with what the law said, which upsets and frightens to death all the cabal stuff again. They don't want him being on the Supreme Court because he's not going to ensure their safety. They're afraid of him because they know he'll prosecute them in a heartbeat.
Yeah, because the president's going to be able to put at least three in, they think.
Yeah,
and he's got four on the federal the Fed board.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just from the standpoint of, you don't see this many options being offered a president. Oh, I'll put four into the Fed. See, the Fed has a board of directors type of thing. And even though they are a private corporation, that board has to be approved by the President of the United States. Maybe even the Congress. But he can appoint whoever he wants. And that's scary as hell, because if he puts up four people that will say, you know what, I think this isn't working, so let's disband it. Gone. The Federal Reserve will be gone.
Yeah.
Right? And now he's got enough potential control over the Supreme Court. I mean, this outsider that wasn't even supposed to be elected, all of a sudden is it being positioned as like this amazing game of strategy where he's got all these you know, different chips on the table on the game board, and it's amazing.
Yes.
And they're screaming for his impeachment because he's an idiot. Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Because they're scared to death of him.
Dolly, thank you so much. We've gone through another hour, through a whole show, and I always have a good time with you. I hope this is all for entertainment purposes only.
Yes.
I hope you guys all had a good time with us. So next week, Jan didn't have a guest this week. She couldn't book a guest. And next week I have guests. So, I'm probably going to tell you that maybe we should take the day off next week. I'll just play replays all Saturday.
And, oh, you mean you have house guests?
I got house guests next weekend, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant guests on the show.
No. House guests.
Okay.
So,
all right.
We won't be back. I mean, we'll give you, you know, shows that are always good. We've got a lot of shows to give a replay for. But Dolly will be live on Wednesday with reading the Ascension.
Dolly reads for,
Ascension. What is it?
Mysteries. By David Wilcock,
which is so much fun. I'm so enjoying it. And then Tuesday we'll have a live Cosmic Reality Show, the live Shungite Show. and Jamie Bates will be with us, and so you'll have some kind of activity going on, but not as much as we normally do. But we'll still be there loving you, thanking you for being our listeners.
Right.
And supporters.
We have good listeners.
We have some amazing people.
Yes, we do. Yeah. I feel blessed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We do it for, you know, because, you know, we don't get paid for this in money, but we get paid for this in energy and just love and, you know, concern for each other.
Right.
We're in it together. You know, we'll find our way out of it together. And some of us taking a little different path, but we're all going to the same place. A new reality.
Yeah. I'm excited for it.
Me too. Love you very much. You be safe. Everybody out there, be safe, be blessed, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Say What? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.